Welcome back, everybody. I'd like to introduce our fifth old-timer, Terry. Terry's home group is Marlborough Tuesday, and the first old-timer you met was Bert.
Yep.
And the first meeting you went to was Wantage.
Yeah.
So, over to you, Terry.
Is that it, then?
Yep.
Yeah, well, I'm Terry, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Terry.
I just happened to look around, actually. I thought we had some... Yeah, here's another one. I thought we had more in earlier. The news had got round that Terry's on next, and they've all pissed off. There we are. Accept the things you cannot change. Yeah, I came to this fellowship in early September 1972. And I wasn't intending to start off on that, actually. How I intended to start today was to say, really, you know, in a normal share and things in the evening and things like that, I whisk through my 20 minutes, 25 minutes, whatever they want and things like that. And then I get a message some time ago and, you know, would I share that this old-timers do in Reading? And we want you to talk for an hour. I thought, Jesus. I've been wanting this for many years. Yeah, I've listened to Clancy, I've listened to Joe and Charlie, and they've gone on for hours on end, and I thought, God, how lucky they are, you know. And then when it comes to reality and things like that, to keep people, you know, occupied and things, you know, because that's what it's all about, isn't it? I'm not here to make you laugh, actually, I'm here to carry a message. But, you know, I had to seriously think about it. So I'd seriously thought about it, and I know I hear many times in AA and things like that, if things are contrived, it's not real, and that, you know. But I don't believe that, because I've known for many years and things like that, if I'm asked to share, I'm guaranteed a few days, good, and I mean really good days, before I share. Because you can't go, you know, walking around thinking shit in your head, can you? Then come to an AA meeting and tell people, A, what it's like, yeah. So I found, you know, if I'm invited to do shares and things like that, it invariably leads up to good days and everything. And my good day started today through what I've learned in these rooms of AA and things like that. You know, if I set my day off right, you know, I invariably have good days. And to me, you know, setting my day up right is... What I mean is that every day, I have at least half hour of prayer and meditation. But it's very easy, isn't it, for somebody, you know, an old fart like me, been around this fellowship for a long time, and to tell you how I start my day, because at one stage, if somebody had said, that's what you have to do, I'd have said, clear off. I haven't got time to do that. You know, I have to get out of bed, I have to get to work, and this is what I have to do. But when I thought about it, what I used to do was, you know, I'd probably upset somebody at work, or they'd upset me. I would take it home after finishing work. I'd get stuck into my missus. Something was wrong, so she'd have to have a bit of my anger or angst, whatever it happened to be, or the kids or anybody around me. They suffered for what was going on in my head. And after I'd upset everybody, well then, I could get washed and changed after having a nice supper cooked by my wife and things like that. Get washed and changed, come to an AA meeting. And that AA meeting used to take all the rubbish from my head. So I would come home quite a contented fellow. Or, as I did for a long time, you know, I would know that I'd have to do a step 10 when I got home. I would have to, you know, make amends to my wife for the trouble that I'd caused before I went to an AA meeting. And then somebody did say one night, you know, they had the gall to say, anyway, if you treated your wife a bit better, you wouldn't have to make amends, would you? But slowly, you see, slowly these things started to rub off. You know, last night, we sat down to dinner, just my wife and myself, and we started discussing, you know, what was going to go on today and one thing or another. And during the week, I shared at another meeting that You know, my wife has never been to Al-Anon. I felt she should have come to this fellowship originally. But I brought her to two or three meetings and she heard what was said. And going back one night, she said, I don't belong among that lot, she said. She said, you're the sick person in this house. She says, if you want to go to AA, you go whenever you like, wherever you like. Don't count me in it. So fair enough. We were separated at the time. That was fair enough. And then I took her to an AA do where they had an Al-Anon share and an AA share. And after listening to the Al-Anon share, she turned around and she said, don't you ask me to join that lot either, she says, whinging lot of buggers. That's what she thought about Al-Anon. And last night we're having dinner and she said, you know, I've often thought about that first night when we heard the Al-Anon share. If I'd have heard a different message, I might have had a different opinion. Which got me thinking as well, you know. If I hadn't have had the right message when I came here, you know, would I have had a different opinion? Because when I, you know, when I came here, when I asked for help, which was one Sunday afternoon in September 1972, everything I asked for happened immediately. You know, I asked for help. First of all, we couldn't think of who, because I'd invited a friend over. I was having a party, actually. I was halfway into my first bottle of scotch. And this friend came round, he saw there was no party, and it was the first time ever that I'd admitted to anyone that I couldn't stop drinking. And he said, well, do something about it. And I said, you know, what do you do? Bring your doctor. Well, this doctor, he'd been part of our lives, you know, my wife, he was our general practitioner. But he also used to come and ride out where I worked. So he knew what Terry was like on a daily basis. At this time, you know, I'm 28 and I've always died with hangovers and things like that, so I used to look for things to make me feel better. I soon found Phyllosan. That's supposed to... We heard somebody speak today about these things that trigger things. You know, Phyllosan fortifies the over 40s. That's what I want. I want a bit more. I'm missing vitamins or something, you know. Then I tried Sinatogen wine. You know, that's full of iron. That's what I need. I need iron. Well, after you drank a bottle of that, you're as daft as you are if you drank a bottle of gin, you know. And then I would ask this doctor, you know, doc, is there anything I can do to make me, you know, to perk things up and everything? You know? And he said, well, Terry, he said, you people in this business, he said, it's an occupational hazard. He said, you know, you live dangerously, you live hard and you enjoy life. Well, if getting pissed every night of the week is enjoying life, well, that's great. I did that. And I enjoyed, and I had all the perks that went with it. But at this particular time, I'm 32 years of age. My wife has gone. My career has gone. And so has my self-respect. And I look around this Sunday afternoon, and our place, it's full of dirty ashtrays, empty bottles, the place is a tip. And I ask for help. And as I say, within half hour, the doctor's there. He stuck a label on me. He said, I've been waiting for a call from you. He said, you're an alcoholic. That's your problem. Well, me? An alcoholic? Huh. I know I could go to the jockey's dinner on a Saturday night and come back the following Wednesday. I would go in a dress suit and a black tie and things like that and come back in my underpants. But that didn't make me an alcoholic, did it? You know, alcoholics were the people that I left on the station in Paddington when I caught the milk train. You know, they were alcoholics, not me. But he stuck the label on me and he said, you'll get no help from me. He said, you'll get no help at all from the medical profession. He said, I know of a fellowship that might be able to help you. And that is the only help you would get. And the chap who was there listening to this, what was going on with the doctor and everything else, he said quite often afterwards, he said, never in all my life have I've ever heard a patient speak to a doctor like you spoke to him. He said, but on the other hand, I've never heard a doctor speak to a patient like he spoke to you. Because his passing remark as he went out the door was, you know, don't forget, AA, you get no help from me. because you're an evil little bastard. Now, what self-respecting doctor would do? Would do a thing like that? But anyway, within half hour, and I had a call from a lady called Margaret. I've already heard that today, actually. And, you know, I'm nicely drunk by this time. I've had a fight with the doctor. I've still got my my farmer friend with me, and we're drinking whiskey. And this lady, Margaret, calls me up, and she says she's an alcoholic. I thought, oh, that's interesting. My wife had been gone for about 3 weeks. I hadn't had any sex for 3 weeks. And, you know, I never suffered from any sex problems when I was drunk. And I thought, aye, aye, they've got women in this fellowship. Perhaps I'll get her around for a party. So I asked her if she'd like to come round and have a drink, and we, you know, we sort of get together and things. She said, well, it's suggested that you know, anyway, she said, it's pointless me coming around to see you. I'll send someone around to see you. And within half hour, someone came to see me. And as drunk as I was, I listened to what he had to say. And the main thing that sunk in was the fact that he told me that I didn't have to be in the mess that I was in at this particular time for the rest of my life. He said, there is an answer. There is an answer to all your problems. And it's in Alcoholics Anonymous. And he explained to me a little bit what he did. And, you know, I got complete identification the first time ever in my life when I spoke to another alcoholic. I'd had all these bums in pubs, and, you know, I would put family in the same class as well. They used to get on to me about drink, and my wife, bless her, you know, she told me I was an alcoholic years before. But anyway, I listened to these people, and the following day, I did a runner. I called my parents because I couldn't have stayed in the house that I was in without drinking. It was easy that I took a drink every day, and I would definitely have done it the following day if this man hadn't been to see me. And I called him up and I told him what I was going to do. And he said, well, where are you going? I said, I'm going to my parents in Wantage. So I went to my parents. I took the telephone number that he'd left me and called him. And he said, I'll get somebody from Wantage to come and see you. Don't take a drink. He'll be there shortly. And as sick as I was, I thought, Jesus, these are everywhere. Yeah. And within a half hour, there was another chap there. His name was Bert, my first sponsor. And he told me the same sort of thing and everything else. He told me that, you know, I could recover. He explained that this is an illness, Terry. You're not mad and you're not bad. You might think you're going off your head. And quite honestly, that was one of the main reasons that I asked for help, because I thought insanity is the next step. And he explained to me what the man had done the night before and everything else. And it didn't make me feel any better, because by this time I'd started to rattle. Well, I used to call it shakes in them days, but through being in AA, they call it rattling, don't they? So I was rattling well and truly, and Bert came round to see me, and he said, we'll go to a meeting tonight. I said, no fear, we won't. I don't want anybody to see me, stay diamond. I'm famous. I was fucking infamous, that was the truth. So I wouldn't go to a meeting that night because I felt too sick. The following night, I went to the meeting in Wantage. I got there half hour late. The meeting had been well started and everything else, and they stopped the meeting. They brought me half a cup of tea and they explained that, you know, you're shaking so bad, Terry, you won't be able to drink a full one. And they bought me some literature. They didn't have starter packs then, but they picked up some bits of literature. They said, you're not going to sleep for a few days. So, you know, I suggest you read this literature. It might not make a lot of sense, but at least it'll give you something to read while you're awake. And it was these silly things that they said and things that made sense. Nobody had suggested this before or anything. You know, it was all new and everything else. And he said, I'll pick you up tomorrow night. We'll go to another meeting, which he did. So he ferried me about for a week from my parents' home. And that was my introduction to AA. And he, you know, coming backwards and forwards in the car. We talked about different things. We talked about the steps. You know, we talked about sponsorship. And he said, I suggest you do all these things. You start the steps as soon as possible. You get a sponsor as soon as possible. He said, and you stay away from a drink a day at a time and come to regular meetings. He said, and it'll work. He said, if it can work for me, it can work for you. And I was filled with hope immediately. So the first week I was here, I had a look at the step. We're coming back from the thingy there, and he said, do you get any identification things from these meetings? I said, yeah, I know I'm an alcoholic. And he said, is your life unmanageable? I said, don't it look like it? You know, my family's gone, my career's gone. I've got a few debts and things like that. I said, he said, well, that's the first step. He didn't say you have to write it down or you have to be in this fellowship for 10 fucking years to do step one. You know, he says you get on and do it. And he said he was the same with the second step. He said, we're coming back. And he said, do you believe that, you know, you're going to be restored to sanity? A higher power is going to restore you to sanity. Well, I don't believe in God. He said, I'm not asking you to believe in God. AA doesn't ask you to believe in God. It says a power greater than yourself. I said, well, what would you suggest then? He said, I'm not going to suggest anything. He said, do you think if you keep coming to AA, you'll get better? I said, yeah, 100%. And I believe that as soon as the rattling stopped. And the rattling stopped after 3 days. The people in these rooms told me I would stop shaking. If I didn't take a drink for 3 days, the shakes would stop. And it happened. So everything they told me, it happened the first week that I was here. And I'm coming back. I said, what's all this sponsor thing then? I said, what do I do to get a sponsor? He said, well, Terry, all you need to do is to find somebody in the room that you can communicate with. And if he's been sober a few days, a few weeks, or, a few years, all the better. But it's just somebody you can communicate with. So I said, well, I can communicate with you, Bert. And it was true. For the first time ever, I could tell somebody, after knowing him for a few hours or a few days, what was going on in my head. And I said, will you be my sponsor? Yeah. He said, seems like we've started, we might as well carry on. So I had a sponsor the first week that I'm here. I've always had a sponsor. I've still got a sponsor today. And my sponsor hasn't been around longer than I have. You know, I don't want some old fart taking me through the steps and things like that. I want somebody who's going to listen to me when my head's telling me it's firmly stuck up my bum and I can't find an answer for it. You know, if I'm the problem, and the problem's in my head, how am I going to sort it out myself? Impossible, because I am the problem. But if I take it to somebody else, they look it from a different direction, they're not part of the problem, but they are the solution. You know, my sponsor today is 10 years sober. He's 10 years sober. And I asked him to be my sponsor the first week that I back here in the UK. Why? Because he was at the meetings that I used to go and see when I came back from India and other places. He was there getting better. You know. So why look for some old fella and things like that when there's people there who are getting sober and I can talk to? So my sponsor today, comparative newcomer. You know, and we communicate maybe 2-3 times a week. Not that I'm screwed up and things like that, but I do know the answer. The answer I found after a few years in this fellowship, that if I communicate with another alcoholic on a daily basis, it's the surest way that I can stay sober myself. If you read what it's all about and things like that, it's one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. Not rocket science, which I thought it was. So I came here and I went through the first 5 steps in a matter of weeks. because after doing the first three, he says the next ones that follow Terry is 4 and 5. I said, well, how do I do that? He said, it's in the big book. He said, haven't you read the big book? He said, you bought it the first week you was here. And I did buy them. I bought the big book the first week that I came to AA. Because that's what my sponsor suggested I do. And I said, well, I haven't got any money, Bert. What do you mean you haven't got any money? You found money to drink. He said, find money for a big book the same way. He said, and if you can't find any, he said, I'll lend you the money. So I got half the price off my parents and half the other half off my sponsor. And I bought a big book. And he caught me out, you see. I hadn't read the big book. I had it, but I didn't read it. So chapter 5, well, it tells you how to do your 4-step. I didn't have a clue. So he says, when you get home tonight, he said, get a piece of foolscap out, he said, and copy out what it says in the big book. He said, and put down your resentments, your fears, your sex problems. I didn't have any at the time. I wasn't getting any. That's the way I looked at it, you know. I thought about it, and he said, and furthermore, he said, when you're putting that down, he said, you put them down, the 7 deadly sins as well. Oh, I could understand a little bit of that. He said, put down on there, you're a thief. I'm not a thief. Huh. I got quite indignant about, you know, I'm not a thief. You know, I'm quite honest. Well, I imagined I was honest. I knew I was a thief, really, because I used to steal from my wife's purse. And I'd already told him that. He says, you're a thief. You steal from your wife's purse to buy booze. That makes you a thief. Put that down there as well. So I put that down, and I did the best that I could do at that particular time. That's the way I look at it today. And a little while later, and things, he said, have you done your step 4? Well, I got a few more bits to put on there. He said, bring it over, let's have a look. So we had a look, and I did my step 5 while he milked his cows. You know, he's a farmer. He had about 60 cows to milk. I think it took him about 2 hours. So in 2 hours, I did my step 5. And I can honestly tell you people today, it wasn't the best step 4 or step 5 that's ever been written, but I have never done another one since. And I own up to say that was the best that I could do at that particular time. And what did it do for me? Well, when I look back, I didn't have no great spiritual flash and things like that. Now everything in the garden is wonderful, but What did happen, and it took me a while to realise actually that the want to drink was taken away. I didn't want to drink anymore. That craving and things which was with me all the time. You know, when I first came to AA, I lived on orange juice and icebreakers. Orange juice was in place of gin and icebreakers, because I didn't eat very much, but they told me the more chocolate you eat, the more vitamin this or other you get in. And so I lived in icebreakers and orange juice. And I worked the first 5 steps, and I stayed away from a drink a day at a time. And other things happened. My wife came back. My wife came back. Now, I would love to tell you that, you know, everything in the garden was wonderful. She came back because I told her a lie. You know, honest Joe and things like that. I'd gone and begged them to come back and things. I said, I've got a job. I've got a job in tow. It's got a house and things like that. And she believed me. Well, I had to quickly get a job, which I did. And, you know, it took me the first of my geographicals. But you see, geographicals in drinking, I did them in sobriety. But my sponsor, he said, I can see what a volatile person you are and things like that. He said, you get a where to find, and if you take any of these jobs, you make sure you can get to an AA meeting. And somehow or other, I did that, you know. I did that. Today, you know, when I share, I say that God was looking after me when I couldn't look after myself. And that's how it turned out. You know, I didn't believe in a higher power. I didn't believe in God. I did believe in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've always believed in Alcoholics Anonymous. I hope to God, because I know there is a God today, and it ain't me. I hope he always allows me to keep coming back to AA. Because, you know, all the messages that I've had for sobriety and to improve my life and things like that, I've heard them all in these rooms of AA. So, you know, I'd like to stop there and the worried look on your face. No. But what I'd like to say was that, you know, from then on, it's been wonderful. It's been really, really good. But it's not true, you know. It hasn't been really, really good, you know, because by doing the first five steps very quickly, it's just the same as if you do the first five steps very slowly, you know. You don't change by admitting that you're an alcoholic and your life is unmanageable. You don't change by... you know, believing in a power of the great in yourself is going to restore you to sanity. You don't change the because you can and your will and your life over the care of God as you understand it. You know, I had such difficulty with step three, and it wasn't until I went to step meetings I realised how easy it is. You know, the easiest way to do step three is to sit down somewhere quiet and say, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. The courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. That's in the 12 by 12. It's not my way of thinking and things like that. But I didn't know that until I started to read that book. So all these things, they're very simple, but we complicate them in these rooms of AA. You know, God didn't take any of these things away. In fact, I think he might have made me worse. Because I didn't drink a day at a time, but I knew what I was doing. You know, the guilt and the remorse and the fear didn't go away. It was still there. So the people who suffered under that thingy there was my kids, my wife, and the people I worked with. And seven years into this fellowship, she served me with divorce papers. Well, she didn't serve me divorce papers because I was a nice, charming young man like my head told me. You know, I always knew if I could stop drinking, I would return to being a nice, normal fellow. I always pictured myself as a nice, normal fellow. But you see, when I began to work this program properly, and I mean properly, you know, I found that I wasn't a nice, normal fellow at all. Yeah. So, you know, being served with divorce papers, separation for another 6 months, I had the kids, and it was difficult. I think the worst pain that I've ever been through and things like that was the pain of rejection. You know, rejection from the person that, I love more than anything in this world. So I suffered all that pain and everything else. I come to meetings, sharing it with a sponsor, staying away from drink a day at a time, and slowly but slowly started to change. I think my wife got, I don't know, because we've never really agreed through, but I had the kids, as I said, and we, you know, she was living in one place, I was living in another, and the kids have come back from having a weekend with mum, and my son says, I've invited mother next week to come and cook Sunday lunch. Well, I could have killed him. I honestly could have killed him, you know. There's me just getting over the pains of rejection and knowing what's going on and everything else. And I thought, you know, what am I going to do now? Anyway, she came and cooked Sunday lunch. We finished up in bed, and she's been there ever since. That's without going too much into it and everything. So, you know, things started to change without any great direction from Terry. And then we carried on. We do a few more geographicals, and I went to Stroud. I lived in Stroud for about 3 years, and I went to the meetings in Stroud, and we're at the meeting one night, and well, I think about the first or second night I was there, I'd kept my ears open, and I heard these people sharing, and I rang my sponsor that night when I got back from the meeting, and I said, you know, Bert, I think this is a strange meeting I'm at now. What do you mean, Terry? He said. I said, well, I'll come to the conclusion, there's about four of us straight, and the rest are priests. He said, and how many's at the meeting? I said, about 14. He said, so there's 10 priests there. I says, yeah, at least. I didn't count them, but there's about 10 priests there. And four normal people. He said, you keep going to that meeting, he said, because they'll keep coming back, those priests, and you'll get a good cross-section of a direction that I'd find a higher power. I thought, where's he coming from? There's these priests, they're all in the same room as me, and they're all talking about they're looking for a higher power, and there's me. I'm delighted, because if God's professionals are having difficulty finding a higher power, you know, there's got to be a chance for me, hasn't there? Yeah. And Father Donald, bless him, he really was my chipping block, you know. I used to really get at Father Donald and things like that, because he'd hear me talk about my wife and my relationship and what it was like and things like that. And Father Donald would have the audacity to give me advice. And of course I would say, you're a Catholic priest, you're supposed to be celibate. You know, how can you give me, a married man, advice on how to treat my wife? You don't know anything about it. And however he put it with me, I don't honestly know. But one night I was railing about God and this, that and everything else, and Father Donald called me after the meeting and he said, look, he said, stop looking for God and let God find you. He says, that's what most of us are doing. He said, and eventually we hope that we will find a power greater than ourselves that's going to restore us to sanity. So my original belief in just in AA, people sowed the seeds for me to go on further. And it continued. So I left Stroud and I came back to Marlborough. Well, Ogborne. And it was the first time ever, I think, that I could walk to the meeting. And I did that. I walked from the Ogborne Maisie, the village where we lived, into the meeting in Marlborough. And I'd arrived. I was about 10 years sober, you know. There's a Margaret from Carn. Yeah, she was about 15 or 20 years sober then. She was the oldest in sobriety. I was next, so I was coming up the ladder. And that's the way I looked at it, you know. I'd smart answers at meetings and never miss one and always there and became part of the furniture, became secretary. And someone shared today, you know, I didn't try to change everything, but he soon got round. It was Terry's meeting, and my sponsor rung up once, and he said, I hear Terry's got a meeting then. I said, I beg your pardon? He said, I hear. He said, it's on the grapevine. Have you been to Terry's meeting? And I said, well, it's just a figure of speech, Bert. No, it ain't, he said. He said, they wouldn't put Terry's name in front of it if you won your meeting. He said, why? You know, what? And the same story, you know, nobody wanted to do service. You know, and I've always done service ever since I came here. From the day Bert took me to my first meetings, ashtrays, this, that, and everything else, it followed on that you know. And, well, that's what I did. And he said, next meeting you go to, he said, have a conscience meeting, and if nobody stands up, leave the keys on the table, tell them you're going somewhere else for 3 weeks. And that's what I did. And the meeting's still going today, the Monday night meeting in Mont. You know, it's the biggest meeting in town. You know, more people go to the share meetings than they do the step meetings. But, you know, I've come around to about 14 years so-called sober. We still fought regularly at home, and that was the place my kids were growing up. And, you know, lots of things are happening in my home. and things which I didn't believe, you know, it shouldn't be happening. And my sponsor said, well, you have to have a bit of tolerance, a bit of patience. That's what they've had to put up with you for a number of years, and, you know, show other people the tolerance that you wanted yourself. So I did that. I come home from work some nights, there'd be party going on in my house. Cool, I used to be mad. I'd have something to eat, get myself off to an AA meeting and, you know, accept the things you cannot change. And then it's my wife's birthday. And by this time, both my daughters are married and, you know, they all came to celebrate Mum's birthday. My son, by this time, he's about 16 and getting out at night, having a few with the boys and everything else. And coming back at past 10, 11 o'clock, putting on his stereo, and his father has to start work at 6 o'clock. And I'm nudging Mother, I say, I'll fucking kill him. If he keeps on doing this, he's going to get it. No, it's all right, you know. And then I speak to my sponsor, accept the things you cannot change. Anyway, they come to this birthday party, and about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, they've run out of booze. So they get the car out and off they go to get some more booze. And they run into a fellow trainer at the bottom of the hill. So the police weren't called and everything else, it all hushed up. Broken car was pushed to one side and things. And something happened up here, and I thought, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. The courage to change the things I can. So I thought, I'm going to do something about this. So I had a brother-in-law who used to come on a regular basis with a bottle of gin and sit around and drink gin and things while I was at work and that. I had a son who used to come home and put the radio on late at night. I had a daughter and a son-in-law who used to come every Sunday for lunch. With three or four bottles of homemade wine, they'd all get pissed, and I'd go to work to get out of the way of them and things. So I thought, right, there's going to be a change. So I thought, I'll sort the brother-in-law out first. So he used to come up on Wednesdays. Wednesday afternoon used to be his afternoon. He didn't go to work. So I went and got a piece of 4x2 out of the shed, and I put it down alongside the door, and I heard the car pull up. And I went and stood on the doorstep, and he had a mate with him, and I said, your visits on Wednesday afternoon, they stop now. I said, otherwise, and I picked up this 4x2, I said, I'm going to bend this over your head. I said, and in with you, I said, you get the same treatment. Now, bugger off and don't come back again. And he never has come back. Next was my son. I get my son, when he come back from work, he'd had a nice day at work, and I said, now, son, I want a word with you. I said, I don't care where you, what, you know, you have a free license to do what you want to do and things like that. But you're not going to come back here at 10:30, 11 o'clock at night with drink in you and do what you think you should do. You're going to do things as I think it should be done. And that is go to bed like normal people do, not come in, switch on music 10 or 11 o'clock at night and wake everybody up. I said, now, you have a choice. You either change the way that you behave, or you go and live down in the hostel with the boys down there. So that was my son. Then I went to my daughter, and I told her the same about Sunday lunches and things like that. And I said, Tanya, you're welcome every Sunday for lunch, and your husband and family. I said, but no more booze. Finished. So they stopped coming to Sunday lunch. And I cannot describe to you how my life changed. It went from continuous, you know, what's going to happen next and everything else, it changed. And I got an apology from my wife. I think, if you could frame an apology, I would have it on the wall today, because it's the only one I've ever had. And there's been things happened many times since. And she's turned around and she says, no, I won't apologise for that either. But that still comes under the heading of accept the things I cannot change. So I did something which it took me many years to do. And then around the same time, and that, you know, I'm sick. I'm so sick in my head. You know, only I would know how sick I was. And I'm going to a meeting one Friday night in Ungerford. And as I've gone out, I've upset everybody as usual. And my wife follows me out. She said, when you get to the meeting tonight, you tell them what an arsehole you really are. Right, madam. So I go to him. I'll go to Ungerford. And of course, they've got a share there. And when it come to me, I said, well, I've had a really good day. I said, everybody was upset and this, that and everything else. And my wife told me this, and to tell you when I get here, what an arsehole I really am. You're seeing everybody laugh and things like that. But it was as if somebody had put the wheel had started. The following week, I go to a convention. I love conventions and things like that. Listen to what other people say, and the benefit that I get. I don't care what anybody else gets, but the benefit I get from hearing people's shares, it puts me on a spiritual high. And I've gone off to the Northern Convention in Blackpool and things like that. The other part of my brain is saying, actually, I'm away from home for 3 days. Might be able to find a bit of spare up here if there's one going and things like that. But it never happened. It's always in my head. But if the chance was there, I might have took it. But anyway. We went to the Friday night meeting. We all had a big laugh and things like that. And as the meeting finished, a voice came from the back and he said, now, I thoroughly enjoyed the sharing tonight, what it's all about. He said, all your drinking stories and the tricks you got up to and everything. He said, but there isn't any of you people have mentioned the steps of this program. And it all went quiet. Nobody has talked about the programme at all. All you've talked about is your drinking stories and the fun that you've had. It has been fun for other people. He said, think about it. And I looked round, and he was an Irish fella I knew. Irish, there they are, look, they're everywhere, aren't they? And his name was Pat. And I'd met Pat 7 years previously in Coventry. And Pat was one of those guys who spoke at meetings. He spoke about the steps, he spoke about God. And Terry put a label on him, he's one of God's people. He's one of these 12 big book study men and things like that. I know, I ridiculed people who talked about the programme. They needed it, those people, I was all right. But the following morning, I'm up there with a newcomer, and the newcomer said, what meeting are we going to today, Terry? I said, we'll go to the Al-Anon meeting. And why I said that, God only knows. Only God knows, because I wouldn't have gone to Al-Anon money if you'd have paid me. I knew what they were like, talking about us AAs and things like that. And anyway, this woman, she spoke about her husband, who'd been in our fellowship for 15 years, and everybody roared laughing with her, They were walking along the canal the Sunday before, and he'd upset her so much she hit him round the head with a handbag. And he fell in the canal. And she said, I'm a little ashamed of myself because every time he tried to get out, I kicked him back in. And everybody's busting. And I finished up. I got my handkerchief out. And, I was crying, actually, because she was describing my behaviour in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I came away from that convention in Blackpool, and I went and found Holy Pat and shook his hand. And nice to see you, Pat. Because I knew by this time that Pat had something that I didn't have. He had a belief in a higher power who wasn't the group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he talked about this. He talked about different things. He talked about this program. And I came back, and I started the step meeting in Marlborough. I mean, everybody laughed at me and things like that, because by this time I'd stopped smoking as well. So there's nothing worse than an alcoholic that gets sober and rows against drink, is there? The same if we stop smoking. Well, worse probably if you stop smoking. So I started a non-smoking step meeting in Marlborough on a Friday night. And it went for nearly 4 years and things. And I did it properly, I didn't invite anybody to share unless they'd been sober 10 years. And, that's what you do if you're a control freak and everything else, isn't it? So it was my godsend. It was by godsend, by inviting these people to share. And I used to tell them, don't know your drinking story, you tell us about this step that you're invited to come and share about. And I grew. You know, I was still only 5'5", but I grew mentally. You know, things started to change. I started to behave better, you know, better at home and everything else. The whole thing started to change. And I always said that, you know, if it folds up, it folds up. It's done me good. And it did, it folded up. In the meantime, I was sponsoring a young American guy and things like that. And he said, I desperately need these steps as well, Terry. He said, I'll tell you what. He said, they wouldn't come to your meeting because, you know, they smoke at the other meeting. And they still did. They smoked at the Monday meeting. They didn't smoke at the Tuesday, at the Friday meeting. So he said, we'll get round that. So we opened a meeting in the hospital. And the hospital meeting that, you know, the Tuesday night step meeting in Marlborough is still going today, thanks to George and everything else. But, you know, it was the change. It was the change in Terry that I needed. And, you know, I still go. How long have I been going on for?
50 minutes, 45
minutes. Am I halfway yet?
Yes.
Oh, that's right then. How long have I got to quarter two? To quarter two. So, you know, that was it. In that time also, I found out that Clancy was coming to Bristol. I went to listen to Clancy. We had a guy who used to come to our step meeting in Marlborough, and I saw a great change in Mike over a period of a few weeks and things like that, you know. He used to swear in meetings more than I did and things like that. He was a much rougher diamond than I was, you know. And I saw a great change in him, and I said to him one night after the meeting, are you taking drugs? Are you smoking dope? No, he said, why? I said, well, I've noticed over the last 3 weeks or so, you know, you've changed. You've changed completely. He said, I've had a spiritual awakening, Terry. I thought, oh, Christ, I wonder what church he's going to then. He said, I went to Bristol. He said, and I listened to Joe and Charlie for the weekend. He said, it was mind-altering. Mind-altering. So I said, well, you know, I'd like a bit of that, Mike. You let have a look, see if there's another one coming up. And the following year, there was one up in London. And I went and spent 3 days up there. And it was mind-altering. It completely changed my concept to what I was listening to in regular meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous here. It gave me something else to think about. I went home and I got the big book out, you know, and I started to study the big book instead of looking at it. And what comes out of the big book keeps me where I am today. And then, you know, the last 15 minutes, life was great. Life was great. And I'd made a decision that I was going to retire at the age of 65, whether I could afford it or not, you know. And, you know, thanks to this fellowship and the wonderful wife that I have today, we come back from a dinner with AA friends in Swindon. We've been to Swindon and I had dinner with, you know, AA company, and we come out, clean the ice off the windows, and somebody said today about flying about, didn't they, and things like that, you know. My wife wouldn't fly in the early days and things. And we was on holiday in Scotland for a fortnight and it rained every day. And I come back and I said, as in from now, I'm going to the sunshine for my holidays. You come if you're going to, you know, if you want to fly, come. If not, stay here. So she had two, you know, that was it. So we found India. We found India. You know, we did the med, then we went to India. And we're coming back from this dinner in Swindon and clean the ice off the windows, and we got back. She was the only one drinking. It was an AA dinner and things like that. They opened a bottle of wine, so my wife drank it. That's what she does, you know. She still do that today, actually. You know? So when we got back home, we went up the steps, and I'm following up in case she fell. Well, that's the way I looked at it. And she said, you know, why do we keep messing about doing this here and things? She said, let's go and live in India. Well, I thought, you know, this is some joke, isn't it? You know, a bottle of wine. No, she wants to go and live in India. So the following day, I said, it's good to catch them the following morning, isn't it? You know, when they've got hangover and things, you know. Are you serious what you were saying last night then? Yes, I was. I said, what do you mean? She says, well, we know what it's like over there and everything else. Let's do it. So we did it. So we made a decision in February, and in November, I'm 63. We packed up, went to live in India. And, you know, I'm about 30 years sober this time. I go to India, I find a home group. That's what I've always done. And we settle in Trivandrum in Kerala. There's only two meetings a week. There's one on Tuesday. Well, there's two on Tuesday, actually. They both start in the same city. They start at the same time. They finish at the same time. There's 25 in one group, and there's 5 in another group. And at the second meeting, I find out that the one in the 5 group is a breakaway from the first group. And there's a big resentment going on, so they have the meetings at the same time, so you can't attend two meetings on the same night. So, you know, me being Terry and things like that, and these 5 people, they spoke in English for my benefit. So I went to the breakaway group. And after a couple of weeks and things like that, talking, you know, sharing back after sharing things, I talked about the steps and I talked about the program, and they said, why don't we start a step meeting? So very shortly, we started a step meeting. We started a step meeting on Wednesday, and we did a big book study on a Saturday. And I went back to the main group and things like that and told them what I was doing. And he's a lovely fellow, actually a fellow called George. And I said, George, you know, we started a step meeting in Govlam on Wednesday and a big book study on Saturday. I'd like you to advertise it among the group and things like that and invite people to come along. And he towered down over me. He's a big fella, George, and he said, people in this group won't be allowed to come there. I says, I beg your pardon? He said, I won't allow any of the members from this group to come to that group. I said, you can't do that. I said, are you some sort of control freak or something? You know. Anyway, I shook hands and we left as the best of friends, George and I, and things like that. And within a year, his group closed down. Because that's what happens with sick groups. They close. They close. And this little group that we started with the steps on thingy there, we eventually, after the second year, we ran an international convention. Now, the first year and things like that, I think we only had about 24 people there. But it was great. Everybody loved it. But, you know, they hadn't done that sort of thing there before. And there's a few foreigners there on holiday. And they went back home and they said that, you know, we were on holiday and they had a convention. They had a convention there. It grew. That convention went on for 9 years. Now, I'm not saying that was all down to Terry. But what it was down to, actually, was my sponsees. Because wherever I go and things like that, I've got a few sponsees today. I'm a celebrity sponsee. You know, I work with a few newcomers that want to get sober, and the others they think they're already sober, and they just say they've got Terry as a sponsor. They never call me up or anything like that, you know. But it's good to say, isn't it? You know, I got Terry. He's my sponsor. He's been around a few years and things like that, and we only speak once a year. Because I can accept the things I cannot change, you know. But I love working with newcomers who ring me up when they're in a mess and things like that, and we can talk and everything else. And that ensures Terry stays sober. And it was the same in India. You know, George and we got one now we call the Sheikh, he's in Dubai. And when he went to Dubai, there was a few people and they had share meetings and things like that, and he runs a step meeting in Dubai. And this is, you know, this is the gift that I've been given by the God of my understanding today, that I come to AA and things like that, not to become Mr. AA, but to carry this message. And this message, you know, the way I look at it today, my message is not my drinking story. My drinking story wouldn't get anybody sober. And I'm bloody sure nobody's drinking story got me sober. It was the likes of Holy Pat who told me about there is a God. There is a God. And if you want to find him now, you know, that's what you do. You know, this program, it tells us, doesn't it, you know, we stay away from a drink a day at a time. The 12 steps take us through the program and everything else, and we finish up with step 12. And step 12 tells us, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. And to me, you see, I've been thinking about this quite seriously just recently, and the first part of step 12, to me, is like the first part of step 1. Only I know if I'm powerless over alcohol. Nobody else can tell me you're powerless over alcohol, Terry, unless I get drunk. But I know myself that I'm powerless over alcohol, and my life is unmanageable if I drink. It's the same with the first part of the 12th step. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, I know I've had a spiritual awakening. I sometimes feel like the fella that I dreamt I'd be. You know, a nice man. And to become that nice man, I have to work at myself every day. Every day, from the time I get out of bed to the time I get back in it. And, you know, I don't go through the steps with a sponsor or anything else. I go through the steps daily in my daily way that I behave with other people. And I'm not going to take my new sponsors through the steps. I'm going to take them to step meetings where they don't just hear my opinion of these steps. They hear the opinion of everybody else that's in that room. So having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, I try to carry the message, and the message is work this program on a daily basis. When you get out of bed, you work to treat people like I like to be treated myself. And these principles, what are these principles? The principles are what the steps give you for our own personal use, and the principles for the group. I can't survive without a group. I couldn't get sober without a group. The traditions, there's 12 traditions, there's 12 principles that keep the groups healthy. And there are 12 concepts for world service, which keeps it AA all over the world. And aren't we lucky today that we're alcoholics? You know, we have a program. These other poor people don't have a program. My wife doesn't have a program. She's a Catholic, actually. She has a religion, but she doesn't have a program. George, the fella, the control freak, and things like that from that group. Every so often, he sends me a message. He must spend all his life on the internet. And every so often, he comes up with it. Terry, they found something in America. A pill. If you take this pill, you won't get drunk. It'd be like the cure for alcoholism. And I always send back, I thank you very much, George. What sort of program does it have? You know, because it's the program. It's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that's enabled me to come this afternoon and talk to you people. And I'm very grateful to be invited. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Terry. Thank you very much, Terry. Great. Really enjoyed it. It's great to have you here. It's a good, really enjoyable chair.
Did I fill the hour?
Yeah. And you did fill the hour. Which is really great message. Today's all about recording that message and having it available for the future as well. So thank you very much.
Thank you.